欢迎收听我们鸡同鸭讲播客，我是柯简，
我是张行之 GJ。
好，那今天呢，我们有一个嘉宾叫 Muddy。 Hello Muddy。
大家好 everybody, hello, thank you very much for having me with you guys today。
好，那 Muddy 是一个英国人，所以呢，我们会说英语录我们的播客。那Muddy, can you introduce yourself briefly?
Yeah, so hello, my name is Muddy. I've just finished my second year at UWE. I take English language and linguistics. I'm about to go into my third year. And since it's summer, I'm interning with Jeanette this summer. So I've been helping you out with a couple of bits and bobs.
Brilliant, yeah, and it's much appreciated. Okay, now we invited Muddy because we know that there is a topic that people sometimes struggle with when they come to Britain.
Yes.
And I know, Gigi, you struggled with this, haven't you?
Yes, so before I come to UK to become a lecturer, I was a university lecturer in China back in for like 20 months. So most of the time, I'm still delivering the lecture using Chinese. However, after I come here, one of my biggest challenge is about separating the he, she, and they. Because in Chinese, because when we're writing he, she, they in Chinese, they're different. However, when we are speaking Chinese, they sound the same. So they're just like ta, 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 they're just the same. So for me, especially that when I need to interact with my student, because they have so many background, so some of my students, they're using they as their pronouns. So for me, it's not about using they anymore. It's about when I'm speaking, I already confused of using he and she. So for me, it's not about the they situation. It's about the he, she situation. I'm already confusing with it. So.
Okay, so we've got pronouns, he, she, but then also they. Muddy, what are they?
So they are pronouns used normally by non-binary people. And that means that there are certain people who don't identify with the gender norms. Yes. So binary by definition means there's two. So boys and girls, that's the gender. Now, what non-binary people believe and what a lot of other people surrounding the LGBTQ plus community believe is that gender shouldn't be so restricted and so confined to just those two norms. So if you're non-binary, what it is that your gender exists outside of those norms. You don't see yourself as a boy, you don't see yourself as a girl, you're something in between. It doesn't have to be split in the middle. You can be identifying as more masculine, as more feminine, but it means that you don't see yourself as a girl, you don't want to use she, her pronouns, because that's how we identify girls, and you don't want to use he, him, because that's how we identify boys. It's something in the middle. It's they, them.
And this is quite common in Britain now, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yes. So yeah, it's becoming increasingly more apparent. I think people are, there's lots of different arguments as to why, but I think tend to be the most positive argument is that people are more comfortable being who they are as time progresses. And with that, people want to display that and people want to live authentically as themselves.
Yeah. So when did you first come across this, Gigi?
One of my students, they are using, because my mind keep telling me that they is using. So yeah, for me, they are using the, but I'm actually talking about one single person, but I'm using they are. They are using the pronouns of they. So it's very lucky for me that when I'm interacting with them, is that I just talking to you, it's not talking about them. So for me, it's about, even for me, in my mindset current at the moment, is that when I need to talk about them, is that I'm thinking about 他们. Tamen is like a group of people, but my mind is actually thinking about one person only. So this is the challenging part, is that I'm talking about one individual, but in English term, why I'm learning English, it's actually talking about a group of people. So this is a challenging part. Yeah.
So Muddy, it is they are and not they is, right? Even when we're talking about one person.
Yeah. So obviously in English, you can use they for groups of people. It can mean plural, but it can also mean individuals.
Okay.
Not just in the non-binary context. It is used in other contexts as well. For example, if I was to say, oh, I went to the shops and the cashier, they gave me my change. that's still talking about one person. I'm still talking about that one cashier, and all it is omitting their gender.
Okay.
I'm not saying that the cashier is non-binary, but the gender is irrelevant to the story, so why include it?
So when would you use this? When would you say, oh, they gave me my cash? Is it just, it doesn't matter what gender they are?
I think it's individual to each person. I don't think people have a particular method as to when they do and don't use it. I think it would make just as much sense, and no one would think any differently if I was to say, and he gave me the change back, or she gave me the change back, or they gave me the change back. It doesn't make a difference.
But I think my grammar mistake here is that because I want to use the they are, mm-hmm. but my mind is keep telling me that when you are talking about they, mm-hmm. you actually doesn't use the they is or using are inside your mm-hmm. your sentence. Mm-hmm. For me, is that if I want to use they are, mm-hmm. and then my mindset is actually keep telling me that I need to use they is. Mm-hmm. So I think this is the challenge for me. Yeah, so I guess is that I might still need a little bit time to like, yeah, I understand now. So I'm just wondering, yeah.
Mm. So Maddy, do you know any non-binary people and how would they react to this?
I think the non-binary people I know, I think they're understanding. I think as soon as you have to do so much inner exploration and self-discovery, I think it must make you some form of understanding and empathetic person. And so I don't think anyone's going to be deeply upset. I think you're... If you were to make any mistakes concerning gender, I think it's very understandable because, and I think it's not malicious. You're not trying to be nasty. You're not trying to go out your way to hurt anybody's feelings. It's just a mistake and that's okay. And so the non-binary people I know wouldn't mind. You're their teacher. You're there to teach them. And it's lovely that you want to be respectful. It really is. But as long as you try your best, I don't think anybody's going to have some massive complaints. I really don't. I think I can understand how... Some people could cause offense to people in terms of the he, she thing.
Yes.
But less so with the non-binary thing, because I think that even in English now, I think that's even something that English people slip up on.
Mm.
So I don't think you need to be worried about hurting anybody's feelings.
I think the major consideration here is about the kindness and how they treat the others equally,
yeah,
rather than about making the grammar mistake, mm-hmm. I guess.
But then one of the other mistakes, Gigi, that you said you often make is the he-she distinction, right? Yes. So when you talk about people, you in Chinese is obviously ta all the way through. And when you speak about people here, you might say yes. She or he and get the gender wrong.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, we just simply doesn't separate the he, she and they. So we are just using the same word.
So until about 100 years ago, there was no distinction in the written
exactly.
language either. Okay.
Exactly.
And now, obviously, there is a distinction in the written language.
Yes.
Where you have he, she, and it written differently, yes. but all pronounced ta. But in English, obviously, it's not just in the written language, but it's also in the spoken language where yes. we have to make that distinction.
Yes.
And then with the added complication of them,
mm-hmm.
we're aware of other languages that do this, right? Maddy, have you got any experiences?
Yeah, I'm aware of, I've got a friend and a lecturer who's Finnish, and they don't make the distinction.
Really?
Yeah, in Finnish,
That's
they
cool.
don't make the gender distinction when speaking. And so someone phrased it to me as, it's interesting when she was trying, my lecturer's a woman, when she was learning English,
yes.
Because... As an English speaker, there's always that nagging thing in the back of your head that's saying, if someone's using gender neutral pronouns, that's going, yes, but what gender? But what gender? Is it a boy or is it a girl? And I don't know why. Yeah. I think maybe because we use the gendered pronouns that it's just, it feels like a piece of the story is missing.
Yes.
But to a Finnish speaker, there's no distinction. It doesn't make a difference. They can use gender neutral pronouns throughout the whole thing. But Finnish is an example of what I know.
Yeah, and Finnish, one could say, goes even further than Chinese because the Finnish pronoun is hen, and it's written hen, whether it's male or female, so it's the same all the way through. So this distinction between male and female is not there in some languages, and people get around it, but then also make mistakes, obviously, when they learn a language that is gendered. So this use of non-binary pronouns is quite common amongst our students at university. And also I know from school, my daughter's school, there's quite a few non-binary pupils. Mm-hmm. But amongst my generation, there really aren't any that I'm aware of. So how come?
I think honestly, I think there's going to be countless reasons, but the one that comes to mind for me is that people say when we speak about language that, you know, language is arbitrary. We assign meanings to words. The words like microphone doesn't actually have anything to do with the sounds that are coming out my mouth. We completely assign the meaning to it. Mm. And I think as time's progressed, I think it's given people more time and more opportunities to think about the fact that maybe gender's arbitrary too. Maybe if the ideas and the implications associated with men and masculinity and females and femininity, you can start dissecting them a little bit more. There is absolutely, in my opinion, no reason that femininity should be associated with females, bar the word fem and femme. And I think that people who are non-binary can make the separation of separate masculinity from men and separate femininity from females. And I think as soon as you realize that maybe those can be reassigned and that thought process can be reevaluated, I think it opens up to such a more interesting perspective on gender. And so the idea that if you grow up liking dresses and liking makeup and liking femininity, that's okay if you're a boy, because men don't have to be associated with masculinity. They can also be associated with femininity, and it can meet somewhere in the middle. You might want to be associated with either. And I think as time progresses, it just allows people to pick all it apart a little bit more and reevaluate and analyze it a little bit more and kind of let it sit with themselves a little bit more.
So society has basically changed over the last few decades, and
depends. This has become more open. Depends. I would say depends.
Go on.
So when I was 10 years old, I guess, maybe like mm-hmm. 5 or 6 years old, I mm-hmm. cried a lot mm-hmm. when I was a child. And then in order to stop me from crying, my grandpa put some very bitter stuff, mm-hmm. bitter powder on my fingers. So when I'm licking on it, or something like that, mm-hmm. they will need to like, because it's very bitter or mm-hmm. something like that. So they keep telling me to be masculine a little bit, mm-hmm. Stop crying, mm-hmm. behave like a man. And then turns out I'm not. So what I'm trying to say is that, so when I come here, my first English name is actually Dick, D-I-C-K, Dick. But in English word, Dick is actually some very male name, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I mean, originally it just meant Richard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shortened version for Richard.
Yeah, and
it's
these a little bit shortened forms are quite common in English, aren't they?
Yeah.
Dick is related to Richard.
Yeah.
Yes, it's just Richard. And in English, most longer names would have a shorter form. So your name is originally Madeline?
My name is Madeline, yeah, but it's shortened to Maddie.
But I thought the Rich is the short word of Richard.
It can be.
It has changed because obviously Dick is the short form of Richard, but it has taken on a second meaning.
Yes, yes.
And because of that second meaning, people over a certain age may still use the name Dick because that's what they used to. Mm-hmm. But younger people may refrain from using that name just because of its added meaning, right, Maddie?
Yeah. No, yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think Richard's not a very popular name in my generation as it stands anyway. I don't know many Richards that aren't people's dads. But no, I'm aware of the same thing, is that they tend to shorten to Rich as opposed to
So
Dick.
If the Chinese student want to study here and they want to create an English name, what kind of male's name that they should avoid? Because sometimes it's a little bit too many names that they should avoid. That I remember that when I'm watching some documentary or some maybe just like videos or something online, they've been talking about they have a lot of words to describe toilet. So even join, J-O-H-N, join, is also another way to call the toilet. Is that?
A John?
A John, yes.
Oh, like a Johnny.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's not used that often.
No, it's not used that often at all.
No, and I know lots of people call John, and John is a very common
name. Exactly, yeah. So it's like, yeah, because there's so many names that are kind of like a forbidden, so what kind of name I should actually use? So this is kind of like a very...
I think that's an interesting question. I don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody's names that are like...
Very offensive.
Yeah, very offensive. Yeah. I think, are you asking about male names specifically?
Yes.
I think I agree with what I said earlier. I think with male names especially, a lot of them are shortened. It'll be Timothy to Tim or Benjamin to Ben.
Yes.
Or, and so a lot of people go by shorter names, which more often than not are quite common.
Hmm. And I think for a Chinese person looking for an English name, mm-hmm. I think those shortened forms are usually quite good. Like, yeah Ben and Tim, definitely. Yeah. John and Paul.
James,
Pete,
is a big one.
James, yeah. Yeah, I think they're your traditional names, very common names, and they're usually okay. So if you didn't want to stand out, mm-hmm. you'd go for a name like that. But Gigi, you chose Gigi. Why is that?
Yes, because my Chinese name is just Zheng Xingzhi. So I don't have a lot of male friends, but I have a lot of besties, mm-hmm. have a lot of friends who are girls. Mm-hmm. So just be friends with them. So yeah, most of the time, so they just call me Gigi. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, I'm like the bestie of the girl. So yes, so that's why they started. Because there's one of the reasons that when I was 12 years old, some of my classmates would consider me a little bit feminine. Mm-hmm. So they just like, because there is a very famous singer in China, it's Liang Yongqi. So she is also Gigi Liang. Gigi Liang.
I know her, yeah.
Yeah, really?
I do like her songs, yes.
Yeah, I also like her song as well. But because my vocal tone is not qualified to sing her song. But anyway, so that's why some of the guys that if they consider me as being a little bit feminine, they just also using Gigi as a name to like, kind of like degrading
to be
me.
Be mean, yeah, but you're
to be mean.
You're owning it, and you're doing a good job.
So basically, I'm just like from Dick to Gigi. It's mm-hmm. like a big.
That's a massive shift.
Exactly. But it's also saying that for me is that it doesn't matter. No matter if I'm a Dick or I'm a Gigi, I'm just me.
Yeah.
And it's also just an easy way for you to like, because if you actually try to say my Chinese name, it's confusing for you to actually say it. So rather than like using my actual Chinese name, just call me whatever you want. That's all.
Isn't that a bit ironic that you're giving me an alternative to you saying call me whatever you'd like, and you're here putting in the effort to try and call people exactly what they want to be called? And you see the irony in what you just asked me.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Because you're obviously a linguistics student, mm-hmm. and I'm a linguist who speaks Chinese. And for me, some of the Chinese names are quite difficult, even now. And for you as a linguistics student, I expect it to be the same, right? If you're mm-hmm. if you're seeing a name like Gigi's Chinese name, you might think, how do I pronounce that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I've not got a clue. If you put your name in front of me, not got a Scooby-Doo. I think I'd butcher it a million ways to one.
And that's probably why many Chinese people would find an English name. And the other way around, I mean, my name in Chinese is Ke Zhen.
Mm, yes.
Which again, I based on my own name.
Yes.
There's two last names. My last name is Seiko, and you could say Sa, the first bit, and Ke, the second bit. And there's two last names that are like that, but I shortened it to Ke. And then Jeanette is usually Jenita.
Yes.
But I just shortened it to Jen, which would be Jane, I guess.
Yes.
But I think it works. Gigi doesn't like it. It's not cool
enough. I don't like it. Because
why don't you like it?
Because if he's using Sako, the Sa, mm-hmm. because Sa is also related to one of the Sha. Sha. Okay. Sha means silly. So, so basically, she mean that if she speak it like using the same, using the incorrect tones or something like that, it mean that he is Professor Silly, which is a little bit weird.
I own that. I don't mind. But it's
I
no
think
longer.
That makes me like the name even more.
Yeah. I also like it, but it's like, maybe not, I don't know. But it's very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't use the Sabit anymore. I just use Ke Jen.
Yes.
So I quite like that name. Cool. Good news. But I know you told me it sounds a bit like an old IE, and I could potentially find a
maybe
slightly
I'm a,
more.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little bit judgmental about the gen, the name of the gen, because when I saw the name gen, is that, yeah, just like you said, that not a lot of like new generation are using the name Richard. So for me, the gen is a very traditional way to the females are using as their names. So gen. So it's also remind me of something like a Cherish or something like that, using the English name. So if you call yourself Cherish in English, it's a little bit, I don't know, a little bit too traditional, you know?
Okay. I guess I'm not very traditional, but I quite like the name. I still quite like the name.
I just know that what I know about Jeanette is a very cool person. That using your name as a Cherish, it doesn't actually hit my interpretation of Jeanette. So that's why I'd be thinking, yeah, Jeanette Worth deserve a better, cooler name rather than using the name Cherish.
But so what about Madeline? So you prefer to use Maddie.
I think it's just what I've always been called growing up. I think Madeline seems quite formal in formal contexts. I sign emails off sometimes as Madeline. It's like on birth certificates, it's on official documents, and so it feels for official use only.
Yes.
And so Maddie is more conversational. Some people go even further and call me Mads and shorten the shorter.
Yeah.
And that has another connotation. Mad is, you know, mad in English.
Exactly.
But that in a way is also quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it goes off. It goes off to so many different things. Some of my friends who are really, really silly, take mads and turn it into mad dog.
Oh, yeah, I don't know where that one's come from. That's picking up popularity.
Because even my name, even Madeline as it is spelt quite differently to the way it normally is. I think it's originally French name. And I think it has an extra E in it, but mine doesn't. So it's just spelled Madeline, Madeline, as opposed to Madeleine. And fun fact, a long, long time ago, I had a look at some of the origins of where Madeline comes from. And from Mary of Magdalene in the Bible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it actually stems from, and I quote, Jesus's whore. And to rub salt in the wound, all the males on my family, all their names meant like great warrior, the god of war, like great general. And that was my one.
So. This sounds like a little bit too... Testosterone.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I would own that though. So your mom, does she ever call you Madeline?
Only when I've been
furious.
Yeah, only when she's furious. She whips out the full name. It's Madeline. Again, only when she is shouting my name for whatever reason it might be. But other than that, no. She thinks my name's pretty. That's why she chose it, because she thinks it's pretty. She didn't give it much thought beyond that, I don't think. She thinks it just sounds nice.
So amongst your friends, have you got many friends that have shortened names as well? Is that very common?
Yeah, it's very common. I know a couple of Millies down from Millicent and Amelia. I also know Liv, Livy from Olivia.
In Germany, this is not the case at all. So most people would have just one name. They might have a nickname, but it's not usually shortened. So I think this is a very British thing or very English thing, English language thing, which is, I guess, in the US as well, right? Bob for Robert and so on. So you may have some names there. Same.
Yeah, sometimes they also use one character as well. Sometimes when I'm writing the email, I'm just writing because I'm being lazy. I'm just G on the initial. So yeah, that's all.
Oh, but in Latin script G. Because you wouldn't in Chinese script, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You would just
do that.
You would just, one character would be the first part of your name. So yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. I sometimes put J just when I'm lazy. Yeah.
Yeah, just remind me of Gossip Girl. Is that the B
and
XOXO. Yeah, very cool.
So we have a very big difference to how things are in China.
Yes, exactly.
Massively so.
Yeah.
And for a student from China who comes to Britain to study, or to any other country in the West, really, some more so than others, what advice would you give them when they turn up here and they're confronted?
Okay.
I think the main thing I've spoken to I've spoken to quite a few international students, a lot of them, not all from China, but a lot of them from Asian countries. And I think one of the things they've struggled with is the humour aspect of it, I think, is something that's interesting that I think people keep struggling with. It's the dryness of the humour. I don't know if you found anything similar, but with the tone and intonation of British humour, falls quite flat. And people can't quite decipher the sarcasm or the off comment, or it's intended as a joke, but it can come across as just blatantly rude if the joke's not being perceived. And so I've had a few conversations with people who have found it difficult to understand the sarcasm.
I can see that.
We don't understand the sarcasm. So
yeah.
But however, now because I'm a lecturer working in a UK institution,
mm-hmm.
so which means that I need to write student feedback.
Yeah.
So because I need to write the student feedback sometime, that I need to be like not being very aggressive and need to be like milder tone now. So there's some very famous one that they have some article, the Chinese student come here to study, and then they say they have a black lingual of the English lecturers.
Never was, sorry.
A black lingual. Heihua. I don't know how to translate it into English.
Black language or?
Black language. Maybe just black language. Means that the hidden meanings of the English lecturer are talking about your assignment.
Yeah.
So basically mean that if one of the English lecturers said that your work is interesting, mm-hmm. it mean that your work is very horrible. So yeah, it's just like something like this. It's I don't know, for us it's actually like, yeah. Mm-hmm. When I'm teaching or something like that, I started to already started to use the same approach to talk about their work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's I don't know.
I mean, your work is interesting. I mean, both your work is great, but it can also mean, you may want to improve this a little bit, right?
Interesting. Like, okay, I see what you've tried to do. You've just not done it very successfully, is how I'd gather that.
Yes.
I think I did a module last year with one of our lecturers, Mark, intercultural communication. And one of the things you spoke about was the difference in Chinese and UK culture. And when you mentioned about that, the kind of hidden meaning, it kind of reminded me of the politeness idea, which is that in the UK, the less direct you are with something, the more polite you're perceived. If I wanted to tell somebody something, if I wanted to criticize somebody, I wouldn't say, I think it's rubbish, you need to change it. I'd say, that's really good. Have you thought about maybe doing it another way? What about this way? Have you maybe thought about this? Just because I think maybe perhaps it could be better this way. The less indirect I am, the more polite it's perceived. So if someone was to say to me, that's rubbish, I'd think that's the rudest person I've ever met in my entire life. even if they're doing it to help me, to help me improve the paper I just wrote.
Yes.
I can see the logic, I do. But my brain is hardwired to perceive that as I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. That was really rude. I don't know what to do now.
I'm struggling with that as a German in Britain.
Yeah.
Because this very indirect approach.
Yeah,
also
I've noticed I've noticed it. I can notice it sometimes in the way you speak.
Yeah.
I can notice it in the way Minna speaks. Finnish is this, she's got this directness to her.
Yeah.
So even in email exchanges, I'm a, hey, hope everything's well. Just checking in with this. Minna's like, brilliant, this time, this place. All well. I'm like, oh my goodness, okay. And I have to remind myself that she's not being rude. She's not being aggressive. She's just being direct. And that's okay.
And it's a cultural trait. And
Massively, I think.
Yeah. And I think many Chinese students coming here to study will probably notice it. It's probably a bit closer to the Chinese culture, the slightly more indirect approach to things, right?
I would consider the Chinese student when they're finishing their degree and try to complete their study in here, I think they're actually expecting some very direct suggestion about how to improve their work. Oh, yes. So, yeah, but at the same time, would you consider that if you are my student, do you prefer me being more polite or being more suggestive about being very direct about the suggestion?
I think it depends. It very much depends on the person. I think some people struggle to see past the blatant, what people perceive as criticism. I think it can be quite disheartening when you're not used to being people being direct with you, especially with work, especially with something you're trying to improve on. But honestly, the route I would take is the overt politeness of, oh, have you maybe tried to do this? I think people respond to it better.
Cool.
Yeah. So this is one to learn.
Yeah.
So you asked about if I have any advice.
Yeah.
My advice would be tentative. Be tentative with your language. Throw in so many unnecessary, oh, maybe coulds, woulds, and shoulds.
is the advice that I could offer. Yeah.
So when you ask somebody something, just say, could I have?
Excuse me, could you possibly show me the way to the bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know where the bathroom is? I'm really sorry to bother you. Don't suppose you know where the bathroom is? As opposed to, it's asking the exact same question, and I recognize that it's the same thing, but it comes across so differently. Hello, where's the bathroom?
I remember that when I first moved to Britain, I was a postdoc at the University of Manchester. Mm-hmm. This is a long time ago. And I went to the canteen with one of my colleagues and I said, oh, I want that baguette. And my colleague was falling over and was telling me how utterly rude I was. Yeah.
If I was, I'd be like, oh, I'm really sorry about her. Can she please have that baguette? If you have the time to spare.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that now because I'm working here for 1 year now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I receive the email from the Chinese student, when they try to ask me for some reference letter for their part, sometimes I can see that some of the students actually wrote something like that. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I started to feel that, my Chinese student is kind of rude when we're looking at the email. So it's
interesting because even I remember way back in GCSEs and A-levels, I was speaking to people who were learning other languages and they were trying to substitute kind of this English politeness into set phrases that just weren't working. So with the I want that baguette, I think when we were in French, it is, I think to want is je voudrais. You say, oh, je voudrais une baguette or whatever it might be. And I remember having the conversation with the French teachers being like, oh, it just seems so impolite. I want that baguette.
That's still more polite than in German. Isn't it? Using the subjunctive.
And I think, is it the same in Spanish? I think I could be wrong. Is it like yo quiero or is the I want?
Yeah, you can use it in a polite form and in a not quite so polite form.
And
yes.
I remember having conversations with people about trying to insert that English mindset into these other languages and it just doesn't translate because saying I want that isn't deemed impolite. But in my mind, I want to say, sorry, could I possibly have that? Is it okay if I have that? And it's just unnecessary.
Would you consider this kind of like language differences causing this kind of misinterpretation of being rude or being impolite? Would it become like a big factor for causing the difficulty to like meeting new friends from an international background?
I'm going to say yes. I think less with the politeness, more with what I was saying earlier about the sarcasm and humour. I think I know a lot of people who bond via humor in the UK, especially. It's kind of if it snaps into place with people, then it does. And that's how people get on, is the kind of people kind of have linked up really similar humors. And I think it's hard to create, you don't get me wrong, you can converse and you can be friendly with, make friends with whoever you'd like. You don't need to be from the same international background by any means.
Yes.
But I think it makes it easier to form those instant connections when those things are kind of mutually understood, because I don't think I quite realized how integral those things that are quite inherently British are in when I talk about the humor until I was speaking to international students and I was like, oh, I'm going to reevaluate the way I'm saying things because I will just come across as blatantly rude and like mean.
So if one of the students that are coming here for 1 year study of their master program, and then they want to meet some UK friends, what would be the best approach? Do you have any suggestion for them if they would like to meet some new friends when they're studying here? Any suggestion to like?
I had a flatmate in first year who was doing her master's, and she was from China.
Yeah,
I'm not sure whereabouts. She And she was so lovely. And she sat me down, it was quite direct. She sat me down and she said, look, I'm trying to make new friends. I'm trying to improve my English. And I'd love if we could have more conversations. And I'd love if we could hang out a little bit more. Her name was YC, is what she told me to call her. That's, I couldn't tell you what her Chinese name was. But really, just really lovely. And she was just quite open with it. And I think people respect openness.
Yes.
And I think it makes sense to people if you were to say, if you were just to explain, be like, hey, I'm trying to make new friends, or hey, I'm trying to improve my English. But beyond that, I think it's not, I don't think it's that different making friends. I think speak to the people on your course, join the societies that you're interested in, because mutual interest brings people together. You're interested in the same topic. That's why you're both studying it.
Yes.
You're living in the same place, conversation.
Yes.
You have the same hobbies. You're in the same societies. It makes sense.
I think hobbies are really important, right? Do what you enjoy and find people that way. And mm-hmm. I know, like, you're playing badminton, right? And
yes.
You've got
international team, yeah. Mm. And I think they all speak fluent English. But there are a couple that are a little bit more broken English. And when it comes to us talking, us conversing, or us having a game together, a lot of it, because it's a hobby, we don't have to speak. There's other movements we can do. There's other ways we can connect beyond language. So if the idea of having to speak English can become quite tedious and exhausting when you've done it all day, every day, and it's your second language and you keep slipping up, it gets quite demoralizing and it gets quite exhausting after a certain amount of time to have your brain constantly switched on.
Yeah.
Then I know people who are joined like dance societies and who have made friends because they're in societies together, but they doesn't necessarily always revolve around speaking and chatting, and that's okay. It's still a friendship nonetheless. It's still bonding with people.
Fantastic. That sounds like really good advice.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about loads of different things today, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's been really, really lovely to have you here, Madi.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming and joining our podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.